And now on BBC Radio 4, our book at bedtime, The Body on the Beach by Simon Brett. And in trying to solve the mystery of the missing body, Carol and Jude have uncovered beneath the seaside town of Feathering's genteel exterior a darker world of teenage drug abuse and black magic rituals. Maggie Kent is the mother of one of the boys involved, and Carol and Jude have arranged to pay her a visit. The reader is Joanna Tope.
The front lawn of 26 Spindrift Lane was unkempt, the paint on the window frames blistered and split. Maggie Kent had changed out of her working clothes into a navy woolen suit. She ushered her two visitors into the sitting room, then stood in front of the fireplace and confronted them. All right. What's Nick being accused of?
We're not accusing your son of anything, Jude replied calmly. You've heard about the death of Aaron Spaulding. Well, we believe he was messing around on the seafront on Monday night with two other youths, one called Dylan. And we think the other one was your son Nick, said Carol.
When Maggie spoke, her voice was quiet and measured.
Are you suggesting that my son had anything to do with Aaron Spaulding's death?
No, said Jude. Whatever happened to Aaron happened on the Tuesday. We're concerned about events on the Monday. We think a crime was committed that night.
All right, said Maggie. I want to know what happened then as much as you do. But tell me first, how you know Nick was involved?
Guesswork and a bit of luck, said Jude. When I went for coffee at Barbara Turnbull's, she complained that her cleaning lady couldn't come in because of some problem with her son. Well, I just made the connection.
Maggie sighed.
Okay. Sam, that's my husband, lost his job about 3 years ago. He worked in the printing industry, managerial. Good house, two cars, son at private school. Then he was out, with a year's money.
He started drinking. Then he got into drugs. Cannabis, then the hard stuff. To dull the pain, he kept saying. The rows got worse and worse. Then one day he just upped and went. Took his passport, the lot. I've never seen him again.
And all this had a bad effect on Nick, said Jude.
Devastating. He'd worshipped his father. And then, with the money running out, it meant changing schools and... Well, he used to mix with a much less damaging bunch of kids than he does now.
Going back to Monday night, Jude prompted, what time did Nick get home?
Not that late. One, two. But he went out again early next morning. Someone rang wanting to speak to him. I don't know what was said, but he threw some clothes on and rushed out. He was shaking like a leaf. Of course, I was due up at Brigadoon to be a dutiful Mrs. Mop. So I wait around as long as I can, and then, just when I'm about to leave, Nick comes back in a worse state than ever, sobbing like a baby. He was hysterical.
Did he tell you the reason?
He'd been out with Dylan and Aaron the night before. They'd had a few drinks. I think they did some drugs, too. And apparently they got talking about black magic. Oh, some gobbledygook. Then they broke into the yacht club. Just for a lark, he said.
What about that Stanley knife I showed you this morning? He mentioned Dylan had his knife with him. But he said none of the boats had been vandalized.
It's Nick's trip the next morning that seems really to have upset you, said Jude. Did you find out anything about that?
Nothing. When he came in, he was in such a terrible state of shock. Oh, I did notice he had sand on his trainers.
So he'd been to the beach, Carol stated the obvious.
But you really have no idea what the three of them got up to at the yacht club?
Maggie shook her head.
Do you think, Jude suggested diffidently, he might tell more to someone who wasn't his mother?
Nick, said Maggie Kent, this is Jude. She wants to talk to you.
The boy stood framed in the sitting room doorway.
Well, I don't want to talk to her, he said.
He turned to bolt, but was stopped by Jude's even voice saying, I want to talk to you about this knife, Nick. The colour left his face and tears welled in his eyes.
Is she from the police?
No, said Maggie.
Where did you get that?
In the bottom of a boat at Feathering Yacht Club. A boat called Brigadoon 2. I think you'd better tell me about it. There was a long silence. Then Maggie said, I'll go and put the kettle on. Give me a call when I can come in again. The door shut behind her.
How much do you know?
Asked Nick.
What you told your mother.
And a little bit more. I know you were with Dylan and Aaron Spaulding on Monday night. I know you had some beers. Probably some drugs, too.
It was only cannabis. Dylan had it with him. He said we were goody-goodies, scared of breaking the law.
And you proved him wrong by breaking into the yacht club and choosing a boat at random, and Dylan got out his knife and cut through the rope holding down the cover. But what you didn't tell your mother was what you found in the boat.
There's no reason why I should tell you either, said the boy defiantly.
I agree, though I could still take the Stanley knife to the police.
That doesn't prove anything.
No, Jude agreed softly, not until they find the body. The boy looked shaken.
How do you know about the body?
Jude heaved a mental sigh of relief. He'd fallen for it, conceded that there had been a body in the boat.
We were horrified when we found it. The moon was full that night. We could only see this outline. But we knew he was dead. And then Dylan, he's into the occult, you know, black magic, the undead. And he said, if Aaron and I wanted to show we were really hard, cutting a dead man's flesh under a full moon, it would make us strong. Then, if we wrote our names in blood and left them on the man's body, we'd have special powers.
And you believed him?
Dylan kept saying we were cowards, and then he took the knife and made a cut in the man's neck. Then Aaron took the knife and made a cut.
And did you, Nick? The boy shuddered and shook his head. What about writing the names in blood?
Aaron did that. He wrote his name and put it in the dead man's pocket.
And Dylan?
Oh, he said he didn't need to because he was the leader.
Anger seethed within Jude. The older boy had egged on the others, but he wasn't going to incriminate himself. He'd allow the gullible Aaron Spaulding to do so, though, and no doubt build up the boy's natural paranoia with garish tales of the undead. He was probably directly responsible for Aaron's suicide. And what happened then, Nick?
Then we suddenly panicked at what we'd done. We didn't want to leave any signs, any evidence, so we took the body and we...
And you threw it over the sea wall into the Feather.
How do you know all this?
Sobbed the boy. Then you all went your separate ways, but Aaron rang next morning to say he'd found the body washed up by the tide.
Yes.
At last there was corroboration for what Carol had seen on the Tuesday morning.
Aaron said the undead body was coming back to haunt him. So I went down the beach and met him. We thought if we put the body back in the boat, nobody'd ever know we'd been there.
Well, behaviour of that kind, concluded Carol, sitting back on her bar stool in disgust, is all too typical of the youth of today.
I'm not excusing the boy's behaviour, said Jude calmly. I'm just saying, from the pain in his eyes, he'd hurt himself by what he'd done much more than he'd hurt anyone else. Now, let me get you another drink. The pub door clattered behind them, and they turned to see an agitated Dennis Woodville approaching the bar. Evening, Vice Commodore.
Oh, hello, ladies. Is Ted in?
He asked the barmaid.
Oh, he's out the back, talking to some people. The police, actually. Can I get you a drink, sir?
Large brandy, please.
No more break-ins at the club? Asked Carol.
What?
He seemed distracted.
No, I don't think so. Though it does seem we've been the victim of criminal activity.
He might have elaborated on this portentously delivered hint had not Ted Crisp at that moment appeared through the door behind the bar.
Evening, Ted, said the Vice Commodore. I gather you've had the police with you. I wonder if they came to see you for the same reason they came to see me.
The landlord cocked an interrogative eye.
Missing person, was it?
Yes.
Look, if you both know, you might as well tell us, said Jude impatiently. Come on, what's it all about?
Ted Crisp saw no point in secrecy.
Police came in asking if I'd seen Rory Turnbull recently. Same with you, Dennis.
Yes.
Well, sometime after 12, said Ted, it seems our Rory buggered off in the BMW. His wife got home round 2 and immediately raised the alarm.
What? Said Carol. Surely there's no harm in a grown man going off for a drive in his own car when he feels like it.
Not usually, there isn't, said Ted. But there is when he leaves a suicide note.
A silence followed his words. Then Dennis Woodville spoke with the quiet confidence of someone who had secret information to impart.
I had a meeting with our accountant yesterday. Someone has been siphoning funds out of the club's bank account. Total of £1,000. The only registered signatories for yacht club cheques are the Commodore, the Vice Commodore, and the Treasurer, who is, of course, Rory Turnbull. He knew I was having the meeting. I imagine he just didn't want to face the music.
But why would he have done it? Demanded Carol. Put his hand in the yacht club till for £1,000. I mean, someone in his position, dentist salary, big house.
Oh, you'd be amazed.
Ted Crisp shook his craggy head. He looked at their glasses.
Come on, let's have another drink. This round's on me. Of course, people develop expensive habits too, he ruminated as he poured the drinks. Rory Turnbull was getting through the Scotch in here like there was no tomorrow.
But on his income, presumably, he could afford an alcohol habit.
An alcohol habit? Yes, Carol.
What do you mean? Are you saying Rory Turnbull was into drugs?
And Joanna Tope reads episode 7 of The Body on the Beach by Simon Brett at 11:15 tomorrow evening. The book is abridged by Stuart Conn, and the producer in Edinburgh is David Jackson Young.